listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Hello, everyone. Back in studio with me again this week, if you didn't already catch the episode, is Michael Gasparo. We are talking about really issues of same-sex attraction, and especially in his practice as a marriage and family therapist, things that he sees commonly associated, whether it be OCD, porn addiction, molestation and sexual abuse in their past. Very important topics that we need to have a better understanding and insight into what is such a trend in media and even sometimes more common among young people coming out as transgender or gay today.
Absolutely.
So thanks for being with us, Michael.
Yeah, glad to be here.
You can find Michael's work you can find him as a therapist at thebreakthroughclinic.com. He's working with people such as Dr. Nicolosi Jr. Mm-hmm. We shared in the last episode, but just briefly about Dr. Nicolosi.
Sure. Dr. Nicolosi Jr. is a psychologist who works in California, and we work with a lot of people who have behavioral addictions, sexual addictions, and a history of same-sex attraction. And his father and him both pioneered a lot of this work in exploring how therapy can help somebody resolve underlying issues contributing to those same-sex attraction. And as a result, many of these people experience sexual fluidity towards heterosexuality.
Yes, and specifically addressing issues of isolation, loneliness, abuse, OCD, like we mentioned before, that we'll be unpacking today.
Absolutely.
Now, Michael shared his story in the prior episode, if I didn't mention that, which you can find at radiotrending.com. So he's also coming from the perspective of someone who has experienced same-sex attraction and fully is in line with what the church teaches and lives out a chaste lifestyle.
Yes. And I think, like all of us striving to live a chaste lifestyle, there are ups and downs to that journey. Chastity is a virtue that we evolve in our ability to live out by God's grace over time. And so I still struggle sometimes with same-sex attractions. Those don't feel as strong or as compelling to me. And the ability to resist those impulses or behaviors has grown significantly over many years of incorporating both therapy, spirituality, community support, faith journeying, spiritual guidance, etc. So I hope that helps give a rounder view of my journey.
And I really do hope, dear listeners, if you didn't hear the episode, go to radiotrending.com. This episode will be available for all of you to listen to, as well as on my Facebook. So I want to get in today. I'm sure you've heard, you know, we've got places like Connecticut where there are a lot of people upset right now because in Connecticut, the number one and number two spot for girls indoor track just went to two boys who say they identify as girls. We're seeing that boys are dominating girls' sports when all they have to do, this is the only qualification, is their eligibility is based on what they identify at the moment. They can then play very high-level state championships against other girls. Here's the issue that I'm seeing, Michael, and I think that you will testify this in so many ways between your work and your own experience. People are okay with gender fluidity to a point. As long as the pendulum swings in the direction of you're identifying as transgender or gay. But if you say, I do not want to conform with some same-sex attraction, mm-hmm. and let's say I want to live a chaste lifestyle, not even necessarily date someone of the opposite sex.
Sure.
So much of the culture say, no, you can't force that upon someone, but this is something some people want.
Absolutely. Sexual fluidity or gender identity fluidity is accepted, like you said, as long as it's in the direction of gender ideology, which says there is no such thing as gender, or gender is a social construct completely, or sexual fluidity is fine in most people in the secular worldview's mindset as long as it's towards homosexuality. Mm-hmm. But what about the people that say, well, I experience a same-sex attraction, maybe even predominantly, but I would like to explore the potential I have to possibly have a heterosexual lifestyle or live out what I sense to be a deep-seated call to the vocation of marriage to a woman? That is somehow negated or seemed to be less than valid in the name of tolerance. I mean, tolerance is supposed to accept more than one perspective, I thought, but somehow we're intolerant of people who want to explore their God-given, biologically driven, anatomically ordered sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Now, your journey, very powerful, a summary for those who did not hear the last episode. You started to realize that you experienced same-sex attraction when you were in middle school, ended up experiencing a little bit of a porn addiction and porn issues over the years, entering into issues of masturbation, isolation, shame. But by the grace of God, I have to say our Lord has had his hand over you over the years.
Absolutely.
And you have loved our Lord, and through an encounter in confession with the priest encouraging you to invite your mom and other people in therapy into the equation, you've been on a journey of chastity and, I would ask, authentic joy?
Yeah, I think I've highlighted this before when I've talked on this issue in public. I experience more peace and joy in my life as a striving to be celibate. Although I am imperfect, I am living a celibate lifestyle. As a celibate person, I have more joy and more freedom in my life times a thousand than I would if I, Michael Gasparo, was pursuing a homosexual lifestyle or a gay identity. Now, what I don't like is when people take that statement and say, so you're saying all gay people are miserable? No, I'm not speaking for other people. I'm speaking for myself, but I do believe that there is universal truth in the teachings of our church on sexuality. And when we adhere and order our lives to the teachings of sexual morality, according to, you know, Christ's teachings in the Catholic Church, we find more peace, more joy, and more freedom than in the other direction.
Even if there's challenge along the way.
And even if there's challenge.
It's important. There can be joy in suffering. There can be joy in wrestling, struggling, whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And let's keep in mind that carrying our cross, we were never told it was going to be easy, but we were told it would lead us to the fullness of life that Christ promised us. So I'm not claiming that this is an easy path. I am claiming that this is a path that is more liberating and more joyful.
That's Michael Gasparo. He's a marriage and family therapist with the Breakthrough Clinic, also doing great work to serve our church through the education of Catholic theology.
Yes. So I'm a confirmation coordinator at St. Anastasia Catholic Parish in Los Angeles. So I work with the freshman and sophomore high school confirmation program and some adults that are being confirmed as well.
Wonderful. Now, Michael, we want to get further into this gender fluidity issue. For those just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory. Great to be with all of you. Even during high school and even through your years now, you've dated women. Now, people are going to say, wow, that's contrary. You've experienced same-sex attraction. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to this?
Well, first, I think it's great. Yes, absolutely. But great to highlight, in even the secular worldview, they have the LGBTQ plus community. Well, the B seems to be negated. Let's say the idea of bisexuality. Now, I'm not an advocate for labeling people bisexual. My point is, even in the secular worldview, they kind of have admitted through their inclusion of that letter that there might be people who experience sexual attraction towards both. And secular researchers, including Lisa Diamond from the American Psychological Association, have been passionate advocates for the idea of sexual fluidity, namely that sexuality can shift over time. It is not immutable, it is not unchangeable, and you're not just, quote, born that way. It's influenced by a lot of factors. It's influenced by perhaps a biological predisposition, or combine that with nurture, so nature versus nurture. But when you ask, is that contrary to me? No, it's not. We can get to that more later.
I just want to touch really briefly. You're mentioning a biological predisposition is very different from being born gay. A biological predisposition, all of us are born with certain predispositions, but we are free agents able to act according to our own free will. And that's really important to recognize.
It is. And biological predisposition means you might have some predisposition towards developing certain conditions, not that you're born with those conditions.
Or behaviors.
Yeah, you might have a biological predisposition towards divorce or smoking, which are both listed as higher biological predispositions than sexual orientation and both considered changeable.
Right.
You're not relegated to being born to be divorced or born to be a smoker.
It's ridiculous the labels that we are placing specifically on sexuality and sexual freedom. This is what was born of second wave feminism, that we had to be able to sway. You can be whatever you want, because the goal was to really destroy in many ways an idea of authority, an idea of leadership, an idea of the Ten Commandments, rules, patriarchy. So much of what the culture has kind of lashed out against has been this.
I agree with that. And to further your point, what you said earlier, you said, Michael, you experience same-sex attraction. Is it contrary that you date women? Well, no. Am I not allowed to pursue possible relationships in line with my biological reality? I'm a male. I have an XY chromosome and a male body that was designed for complementarity with a female body. So if I choose to seek a way to find a way, if it's possible for me to, within harmony with my within myself, pursue, according to my conscience, a vocation to married life with a woman who, in full awareness of my own journey, agrees to go on that path with me, is that not my God-given right?
Right. And there's so many men, and not a lot of people hear these stories because they're not commonly told, men who've experienced and women who have experienced same-sex attraction at times, inclinations, but are happily married, mm-hmm. living virtuous lifestyles,
absolutely.
Have incredible families. And yet, for some reason, we think if there's been the slightest inclination to even some way, let's say in middle school, to have a same-sex attraction, that suddenly labels you gay. That is not true.
It's not only not true, it's harmful.
Yes.
It's harmful. And of course, that if it's untrue, it's, you know, implied that it's a lie, and lies are harmful. So we can get there just through our logic. But
right.
I want to emphasize that we are harming children when we encourage them that they must explore. I can't tell you how many people told me, because I had same-sex attraction, I had to go explore those attractions in real life in order to understand whether or not I was truly straight or gay. And I'm putting air quotes for those of you on the radio who can't hear me. Because that was advice I got from older people that were trying to encourage me. And it contributed, of course, I made my own choices, but it contributed to my rationale as to why I was acting out homosexually at times. And that is a harmful rationale. You need not engage sexually with the same gender to know whether or not those behaviors are truly a part of who you are, or if they're just inclinations that are harmful and not helpful towards your path. And
in reality, is the same exact argument as, well, you should, you know, live with the person, try it out before you marry them. I don't have to figure out what it's like to live with someone, have sex with them before marriage in order to know whether or not behaviorally we're going to be compatible.
Absolutely. And it's a step even beyond that, too, because it can actually further cement tendencies, behaviors, and patterns that might have been less compelling otherwise. So similarly to that, we have a lot of clinicians that I know, other therapists, who see clients now more and more who are not same-sex attracted, but through pornography become so engaged in pornographic culture that they stumble upon homosexual pornography and then begin to have homosexual feelings as a result of exposure to highly eroticized images of people in sexual scenarios. So we're influenced by a lot of things, including what we see and do.
So this is actually getting to a teaser for what we're going to come into a little later. People with same-sex attraction, sometimes it's a porn addiction, overexposure to same-sex porn. Next thing you know, they overcome that sex and porn addiction. It's a byproduct that sometimes that same-sex attraction is gone as well, correct?
Absolutely. I have personal friends who have had that exact story. Predominantly opposite-sex attracted through high school, pornography led them to homosexual porn. They began to be compelled by that for a short time. But when they removed that stimuli from their life, they found equilibrium in their sexuality and are happily married to women like they thought they should be all along.
And Michael, I have to say, I remember just going into college, I was heartbroken because I saw, as one of my old friends from high school, we were no longer connected, but I'd see on social media as she got into this party lifestyle. Next thing you know, she was sleeping around with these different men all the time. She was waking up drunk, high, I mean, on ecstasy, crystal meth, you name it. And this girl years later ends up saying that she is same-sex attracted. Is there any surprise after all of these addictions and truly violations to her body that she is confused about her own sexuality?
Not surprising to me, and not surprising to many secular researchers, but there has been a clear attempt by much of the psychological community to distort understandings of behavioral sciences to further a political agenda, which is namely a good idea to stop discriminating against people in the LGBT community, but doing so through the proliferation of lies about the nature of sexual orientation development is not a good way to do that.
And that's what's so frustrating, especially us living in Southern California, in the state of California. We're seeing pressure on our legislator, especially even within the school systems. I know San Diego, there's been a lot of controversy because all the teachers are really being pressured that if a child as young as 5 years old says they have some form of same-sex attraction, you don't tell the parent and you affirm them and actually encourage sexual exploration today. This is harmful behavior. Can we not recognize for any 5-year-old?
I completely agree with you, but I also think it's important that the parents know that they not only have the right to speak with their child about this, but they can push back against this type of draconian legislation. I mean, this is truly concerning, and we're seeing the legislation from our, I mean, Bishop Barron has spoken out recently against legislation that could impact priests in the seal of confession. Right. The list goes on. So when we as Catholics see legislation that is dividing us, that is attacking our right to sexual morality being taught in our schools, we should stand up and not be silent. The evangelical community has done a better job of this over the years. And I want to encourage Catholic listeners to not feel like they need to be complacent, but they are empowered to speak out publicly, to challenge these laws, and to affirm that they have in their hands, in their grasp, a beautiful life-affirming teaching about sexuality that will further the development of these young children, not add to their distress.
I love that. That's Michael Gasparo. He's a marriage and family therapist with the Breakthrough Clinic. You can find the Breakthrough Clinic at thebreakthroughclinic.com. Michael, you're reminding me of that quote that we brought up on our last show together, and I think it's going to be kind of one of my new favorites. That's from Father Carter Griffin, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he talks about how we have to courageously rebel against the wisdom of the age. It's not wisdom. It is lies.
Absolutely.
Continuous lies. And it's to the point where, as we've been mentioning, 5-year-olds are being encouraged to explore their bodies and the bodies of others, which ultimately is child abuse, which is why pediatricians are speaking out against it. So, Michael, I want to talk here about really the relation of same-sex attraction with certain behaviors that you see in your practice as a marriage and family therapist. I know one very common behavior, and we've been alluding to it, is the connection to pornography. Can you speak more to that from a behavioral standpoint?
Sure. I think if you're dealing with a pornography addiction, I work as an associate marriage family therapist with a lot of people who have pornography addiction, particularly to same-sex pornography. However, there is a through current here in normal sex, other sex addiction that is not related to homosexuality, if there is an affect regulation issue in a client. And when I say affect regulation, to break that down into, I guess, more layman's terms, if somebody's emotions are overwhelming to them or they're having a difficult time coping with them, they will often be drawn towards finding equilibrium through other means. Some of those vices, including pornography, are ultimately not serving them well and balancing their equilibrium, but it's a short-term, temporary adjustment. One thing that we notice a lot is we try not to solely focus on the behavior of pornography, but to look more deeply at the emotional instability or the good they seek through stabilizing in use of pornography and help the client address the underlying issues. Mm-hmm. If we can bring Christ's healing through behavioral sciences to people's underlying traumas, their wounds, maybe their attachment loss from their father at a young age, maybe feeling overly enmeshed from certain females in their life so they flee from the male realm, maybe it's through a molestation experience or bullying from their peers that they feel isolated, disconnected, and not fully male. And then at adolescence, they feel drawn to these images in pornography that highlight a false illusion of male connection. Of course, they're enticed by that. And many of them have been enticed by that for years. So we have to just say, we're not going to slap you on the wrist. We're not going to try to take away the porn itself right now. What we're going to do is we're going to look at what wounds are fueling the fire of this addiction and bring those to light and bring healing to those deeply affected areas of your heart and mind and soul.
The work that you guys are doing at the Breakthrough Clinic, but also through 3 integrative therapy, where it's specifically addressing essentially these behaviors, these addictions, these traumas, and trying to help people to really be integrated emotionally back mm-hmm. into society. And I think that it's not just someone who's experiencing same-sex attraction, porn addiction, or whatever it might be. We are living in a time where literally young people today disconnect from their cell phone for a number of days, don't have contact with it, and are physically and emotionally overwhelmed by the emotions that they are experiencing experiencing because they're not allowed to experience them because we're all walking around with our phones addicted to them. And kids who have never experienced boredom or they didn't realize that's what mm-hmm. they're experiencing. So I'm looking at your website, the Breakthrough Clinic, right now, and you have a series of assessments. And I think this is directly related. People are having a hard time coping emotionally. So you have assessments that people can do for free online. It's binge eating, sexual addiction, drug and alcohol, gambling addiction, shopping, all things people are doing to try and they're not really cope with their emotions.
Right. And we use the same techniques for addressing unwanted same-sex attractions as we do for every single addiction you just mentioned. And it's not that same-sex attraction is exactly equivalent to an addiction, but there is a component of the healing process where underlying trauma, emotional wounds, behavioral addiction issues run together, and addressing those through standard psychotherapy methods addressing trauma and emotional issues can, as a result, clients see a sexuality shift. So many of our clients, not only are they more able to live in line with their church teachings about homosexuality, but they're able to see a level of the enticement of that same-sex attraction diminish completely. For some of them, the same-sex attractions completely go away. And for many of them, as they also do that similar work, their opposite-sex attraction or their openness to heterosexuality increases significantly. But that is as a result of other work to address underlying emotional issues, not as a way of us slapping anyone's wrists or trying to directly change their sexual orientation.
But we can't even limit the work you guys are doing because it's not just in terms of same-sex nope. attraction or heterosexual attraction. It's also suddenly ability to bond with other people, suddenly ability to bond and have a relationship with your parents. This is part of the power that I have to speak to in the therapy today, especially Catholic worldview therapy.
Relationships. Yeah. It's all about relationships, with starting with God's love for us and then our ability to live that out with one another. My ability to see you as a woman, as a whole woman of God, Timmery, is infinitely better than it used to be when I was younger and was engrossed in homosexual ideology, because that intrinsically blinded me to the complementarity of the sexes. There were a lot of wounds in my life that kept me from seeing women in the way I can now as distinctly complementary to men. Mm-hmm. And so we not only deal with a complementarity issue, we're also, like you said, dealing with family issues. The ability to be intimate and close with men is so hard for a lot of men who have same-sex attraction, or the ability to trust women in an intimate way in a sexual context once they're in marriage mm-hmm. is very difficult mm-hmm. unless they resolve some of these underlying wounds that have blocked them from fully developing their natural biological potential according to their anatomy and deeply held religious values and beliefs.
I love that. And it makes me think a little bit of Daniel Mattson's story as well. And he talks, I think that it might even be the subtitle of his book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. Mm-hmm. I think the subtitle has something to do with reclaiming my sexual identity. The reality is here you are coming from the perspective as a therapist, our sexuality is rooted in our biology. I mean, there are mm-hmm. hundreds of sex difference characteristics throughout our whole body.
Absolutely. And we are entitled to define ourselves by our beliefs and our values, not just by our feelings. Mm-hmm. Many people have feelings or inclinations, proclivities, if you will, mm-hmm. that are contrary to their values. And we don't ask those other areas of life to be defining characteristics of that person's identity. Mm-hmm. Somebody might have an inclination towards shopping in a way that is disordered, perhaps, mm-hmm. right? We see this a lot. People who are rich, shoplifting. Why? Because there's a compulsion towards something within them that needs that kind of affective shift, that emotional pull, right? But we don't say, you're a shoplifter, that's your identity. Take that, make it who you are, and wear it like a pride badge. Well, we shouldn't also expect this of people who have same-sex attraction. Keep in mind, no one here is arguing that people who want to identify as part of the LGBT community shouldn't be allowed to do so. I'm not here to preach division or to preach condemnation of people's souls or their right to self-identify. What I am here to say is there's another way, and Catholics and Christians and people of goodwill have the right to pursue that other way according to our conscience, our beliefs, our faith, and our values.
So powerfully said and much needed to be heard. I hope everyone listening hears the reality is this is the truth, and we can proclaim it courageously and on strong footing. We don't have to worry about it. Michael, can you speak to at thebreakthroughclinic.com? There are actually addiction tests, various mm-hmm. behavioral tests that people can take. And I think it's both to create self-awareness, but also then go through possible therapy from
there. Sure, yeah. If people want to go to our website, they can take some of those self-assessments and kind of give you a score that will reflect whether or not it's indicated that you might benefit from professional intervention. And therapy is a tool in people's tool belt. I think it's one that the church has often supported, but we don't use it to negate the power of our sacraments or our spirituality as well. So they can be complementary to one another.
And as I mentioned before, some of those assessments have to do with shopping addiction, as mm-hmm. Michael mentioned, gambling, drug and alcohol, sexual addiction, and much more. So this is a phenomenal resource. Check it out at thebreakthroughclinic.com. We'll be right back with Michael Gasparo.
Timmery will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Shout out to everyone with us on the live feed. You can follow me on Instagram at Timmery. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter as well. And kind of fun, exciting little thing. I know some of you guys have been asking. I did finally post long awaited some wedding photos from my recent marriage. So you can find those online as well. I have in studio with me Michael Gasparo, who is a marriage and family therapist. And he's specifically speaking to what he sees very common from a behavioral perspective of correlations between things such as OCD, same-sex attraction, pornography addiction. So can we talk a little bit about the strong connection to OCD?
Sure. So I want to highlight that I'm speaking on behalf of the population I work with. And I work as an associate marriage and family therapist and associate professional clinical counselor in California. So our conversation today, we should be careful to at least acknowledge that we don't want to overgeneralize to across the board everybody in every circumstance. Mm-hmm. But when I'm talking about a clinical population here, we see there is a high concordance rate, much higher in men who have same-sex attractions of having obsessive-compulsive disorder than in the general population. And people can seek data about this online. There are resources available. I'm not going to quote any studies right now, but there are studies that support this information. And what is important for us to know, particularly being on a Catholic radio station, is that our Catholic faith is beautiful, and the fullness of truth revealed through Christ Jesus to us through the teachings of the church is there. But our human approach can sometimes be flawed and imperfect. And obsessive compulsive disorder impacts a lot of men who have same-sex attraction in a way that can contribute to them hiding out an obsessive scrupulosity. We call this religious or scrupulosity OCD, where they become so fixated on their same-sex attraction and its impact on their life and their faith journey that it can become entangled with OCD in a way that is harmful to their psyche and actually detracts from an authentic, relationally based experience of the church in Christ Jesus.
Now, could you give us an example of a type of behavior?
Absolutely. So some people engage in compulsive confession going. And while it can be uncomfortable to admit that that's possible, there are some people who engage in pornography and masturbation followed by compulsive confession without fully integrating the reality that their reasoning for going to confession is to alleviate an intense anxiety associated with their compulsive obsession with their same-sex attraction and less about an authentic repentance from that behavior. So one good example is this is shame and anxiety driven more than it is, let's say, repentance driven. So an authentic experience of confession can often leave somebody feeling different. I think you might have experienced that in your own life. I know I have. Maybe there is an emotional component. But a lot of times for our people who suffer from OCD, they attend confession and feel tremendous shame still afterward. So if you are somebody that goes to confession and notices that you go as a part of a compulsive cycle that leaves you feeling more ashamed and anxious than before, it doesn't mean the confession was invalid, but it does mean it could be a good red or yellow flag to say, I wonder what's going on here. Maybe I should talk with the priest about scrupulosity, mm-hmm. which can be prevalent in even non-same-sex attracted people. And the church has addressed this throughout the ages without using the terms obsessive compulsive disorder as well.
I don't want to take us too far off topic, but a common thing that you'll hear more so the older generations talk about is Catholic guilt. This is usually more so, though, I do have to say, fallen away Catholics, or might I say lukewarm Catholics who are maybe going to church on Sundays, but they talk so much about Catholic guilt. Could you see in a tie-in for maybe someone who is an actively practicing Catholic, who's going to confession regularly, but they've still got that guilt? Could that be something connected to an OCD where maybe there's a lack of that repentance taking place? See the connection?
Yes. So there are two areas of obsessive compulsive disorder that tend to be really common in our practice with men who deal with same-sex attraction. One is called religious, moral, or scrupulosity OCD, and the other is homosexual OCD, where some people actually fixate or obsess about the nature of their sexual orientation, mm-hmm. or their ability to leave that orientation behind and perhaps become heterosexual. So these two things can kind of interweave with one another, and it's good for me to add this caveat. If you're listening to this and think you're curious to learn more about obsessive compulsive disorder in general, there are great online resources. One is the Obsessive Compulsive Center of Los Angeles, which has a great website with a lot of information about OCD. So I want to add that as a resource for people who are listening. But if you want to talk about the guilt component flowing together, when we leave the sacrament of confession, that is a time to feel gratitude for the gift of God's mercy and grace in our lives. And if that guilt is following us out of the confessional, to me, that's a great little indicator that maybe some part of what we're doing might not be obsessive compulsive disorder, but might be scrupulosity rearing its head a bit.
That's a really good distinction, really making clear if you're still feeling shame, guilt, rather than gratitude for the graces of God's sacrament. God's sacrament alone is not working there, but there's more mentally going on that needs to be worked through. And I think that's a really key distinction that will be helpful.
Great. And I hope that it is also clear that I'm not a priest, right? And nor am I a moral theologian. I'm just pointing to certain symptoms that we see in our clients that indicate it's a good to do an assessment about obsessive tendencies, which might lead ultimately to a disorder or what we call an obsessive compulsive diagnosis.
Right. And I think that clinical perspective, you know, sometimes people like to separate science and faith, but the reality is the two go hand in hand. And if there are certain feelings of guilt taking place still after the confession, part of that can be your conscience and needing to make retribution with society or maybe certain people, but that shouldn't necessarily so much be guilt, but a call more so to action of how do I solve this damage I may have done by some sinful behavior.
Sure. And maybe you highlighted a great perspective there that an authentic repentance moving towards action is quite different perhaps than a shame-based cycle of guilt that's further driving somebody back towards their sinful tendencies and not mm-hmm. towards more freedom or reparation in the community.
Mm-hmm. That's Michael Gasparo. He's a marriage and family therapist with the Breakthrough Clinic, doing excellent work helping people come out of addiction, trauma in their past, and also working with people who experience same-sex attraction to find joy, peace, no longer the loneliness, isolation, and difficulty bonding that is very common.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk also from the perspective of, unfortunately, so many people who are same-sex attracted, even Camille Paglia, who is a self-proclaimed feminist lesbian, says herself that one thing we're not allowed to talk about as a population is the reality of the issue of specifically difficulty bonding with a parent or sexual abuse in the lifestyle background of a person with same-sex attraction. Can you talk about this connection to molestation?
Absolutely. So I speak on behalf of the clients I work with, and I work mostly with male clients. So I think the guest or the speaker or friend you mentioned might have a great perspective on female same-sex attraction as well.
Right. She's specifically talking primarily about men, but she herself, as a self-proclaimed lesbian, is speaking to the whole population.
Absolutely. So I'll give a great example. There are many clients we work with at our clinic who had a same-sex molestation experience as a young child, mm-hmm. Maybe at 5 years old, somebody that was older than them, an adult at that time, touched them or molested them in a way that was obviously not only illegal, unethical, and immoral altogether. And we can all get behind that statement, right? But then going forward from that, that person began enacting that same behavior with peers first, so other boys, that exact same behavior then in teenage years and into adulthood, but also felt attracted to women. And that person then, because they were a Christian, knew that those behaviors and tendencies to exploring with men, that molestation reenactment, still wanted to be married, but that in their life became a recurring theme of seeking pornography that emulated and replicated that molestation experience when they were vulnerable to other psychological issues, such as loneliness, isolation, emotional dysregulation, or intimacy issues with their spouse. So what we do at our clinic with that client in particular is resolve the wound of molestation and its associated reenactments throughout their life. And as a result, the sexual draw towards that behavior diminishes.
This is what's scary, is we were talking about this earlier in the state of California. We're seeing in other states as well, but we're seeing this encouragement that if you identify as same-sex attracted, you should start exploring sexually at a very young age. Well, what if that child was molested and now you're encouraging same-sex interaction when already psychologically, like Michael is saying here, a child who's been molested is going to try to work out and figure out what happened to me, and they're going to start experimenting, not so much experimenting, but trying to work out what happened. You're contributing to that abuse.
And you've then declared that that child is defined by the things that came up for them as a result of an abuse experience.
Right.
That is further victimizing this child. Let's keep in mind, too, that a lot of people in the LGBT community who advocate for laws restricting people exploring same-sex attraction shifting in therapy say they make exceptions for people who are victims of abuse. But it's not that clear cut, because even the adult man who I mentioned as a client of mine in a vague way to highlight his experience did not fully identify that experience from childhood as abuse when he came to therapy. He simply identified his current same-sex behaviors as problematic to his marriage. It wasn't until we then addressed the abuse when he was 5 years old that he understood it to be abuse and to be contributing to his current same-sex attractions. So these laws completely disregard the complexity of addressing sexual molestation events as adults or the impact they have over time on somebody's life, and not just single outliers to these arguments.
That's Michael Gasparo. He's joining us from the Breakthrough Clinic, doing incredible work. And I keep pushing that more often than usual, because what you're sharing is really a mind shift here for a lot of people. They're having to change their mindset about, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't encourage sexual exploration because there might be a past molestation. Like, you guys, the issue of same-sex attraction runs so deep from past experiences and addictions that feed it. We have to get into the nitty-gritty here.
We have to get into the nitty-gritty and also acknowledge that not all the paths into same-sex attraction are exactly the same. So not everyone has been a victim of molestation, but there are many people at our clinic who come in with a very similar story that led them to where they are and the experience they have.
I want to talk about some affirmative things for helping in such circumstances that can be so traumatizing for many people and confusing when you or maybe someone you know is experiencing same-sex attraction. We'll be right back with Michael Gasparo.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
I'm back with Michael Gasparo. If you did not hear this full episode, I just want to remind all of you, Michael shares so much more of his insights and testimony on my prior episode, which you can find at radiotrending.com, along with links to all of his work, biography, and where maybe if you're in the Southern California area, you can get connected to him as a therapist or the network that really runs across the nation doing Skype and phone therapy as well, correct?
Sure. We provide therapy to people in the state of California. Okay. And then we can refer people to therapists possibly in their area. We have therapists that work with us in other states and things of that nature.
Awesome.
As well. And we internationally work as well. We can see clients from other countries.
Fabulous. So Michael Gasparo, as I might have mentioned as we came into the segment, is an associate marriage and family therapist doing fantastic work, specifically working with trauma, abuse, same-sex attraction. We're going to talk now specifically from the perspective of so many people who experience same-sex attraction often have struggles with their parents, specifically men with their fathers. Can you speak to this?
I can. And I want to highlight before I jump into that, that this is not about blaming. It's about naming. Yeah. So we try to name things that aren't working well for our clients, help them to name them without blaming anybody. Because as we know, we're all called to have compassion and forgiveness for people that for whatever reason maybe fell short in their duty to us in our lives. So a lot of our clients, most that come to our clinic with same-sex attraction, feel a distance or an estrangement from their father, especially during early formative years of their life. And they often also feel sometimes enmeshed or overly emotionally connected to their mothers. Now, this is not a one-size-fits-all thing, but this is a pattern we see. Either the father was hostile or distant. So we have two different sort of models of fathers that we see, some that maybe were just unable to provide the type of stable emotional attachment that that child needed at a young age, or a critical, harsh father. This is about naming tendencies, not blaming mom or dad. Mm-hmm. Every family is imperfect. No family is, the holy family like Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. So we're just identifying trends, and we want to encourage these young men who come to our clinic or adult men to ask themselves questions. What is working about my relationship with my father and what isn't? And we can encourage healing in that way too. But if we ignore the problem, if we deny what's actually happening, we're not moving towards healing. Mm-hmm.
There's a book, and the title you and I talked about might be very controversial, but really the book is helping to address it. There are same-sex tendencies that can develop early on, and how you parent can impact whether you feed into them or don't feed into them. And really kind of giving children affirmation, having good male, female relationships as a mother and father with your children. And the book is by your mentor's father, Dr. Nicolosi. And the book is phenomenal. I'm reading it right now, and I'm about halfway through, and it's a parent's guide to preventing homosexuality. And what it is really helping to make sure that there's adequate bonding taking place, adequate behaviors for age, but bonding in relationships, you know, the ability to have a relationship with a friend of the same sex, with a parent, is so important. And that's what this book really gets into.
Yeah. And for young boys in particular, by around age 2 or 3, there's an additional developmental task at play. They've got to detach from the primary attachment figure, your mom, and become fully attached to the same sex parent, the father. And this attachment shift, this gender identity phase of development, is very important for young boys. And some young boys have a harder time than others. Maybe they have a predisposition towards certain sensitivities like shame or attachment loss. And maybe dad doesn't treat all of the boys the same. Mm-hmm. Or maybe older brother is bullying and critical and harsh, which makes it harder for the younger brother to connect with dad. There's so many factors at play.
Maybe mom's isolating. That's a key thing that the book also talks about. And I think that this is very common in an era where we are consumer parents. We have children for the sake of wanting them on our own timing. Our children's upbringing can be so much about what we want, what we do with them, how we feel. And so sometimes the mother can contribute to same-sex attraction by isolating the little boy from other men.
This is my special little boy. He'll be the boy that other boys couldn't be to me, or the boy that my husband isn't providing emotionally for me right now, so I can get some of that emotional attachment from this special son of mine. And so many of our men come to us telling us they have this special relationship with mom. Meanwhile, this completely distant, hostile, or non-existent relationship with dad. So we address that. We don't say, oh, you've got to be enemies with mom and best friends with dad. We just say, where is wounding and imbalance in this family dynamic at play? And where can we invite healing and restore balance to it without blaming either parent, but with simply addressing actual systemic relational challenges?
And I love this book because it actually is talking about how often the father has no idea this is happening. Often the father might be a really good man, but there's been a difficulty in bonding. And the reality is I think it's very easy if a boy's not getting enough attention once they hit, you know, the middle school, high school years, if they're not getting what they want from the dad, they're going to be mad and reject the father, and the father rejects the son, and it turns into this spiral of issues.
Yes, a cycle that just almost grows momentum over time.
Right. Can we also talk, especially for boys, this eroticism that can take place where people suddenly think, oh, I'm same-sex attracted, but partially puberty sinking in, all these hormones are kicking in.
Absolutely. I mean, we just highlighted that for a lot of these men, again, we're not speaking for every man, but a lot of these men that come to our clinic, and many that I know outside of our clinic, by the way, have this experience of feeling the realm of men was something so exotic to them and distant and something they didn't fully have tangible ownership of, because masculinity is learned and it's developed over time. So when they hit that crucial time of puberty, influx of hormones, testosterone surging, and they feel so distant from the realm of the world of men, it's exotic to them. And what is exotic, we say, becomes erotic. Eroticism is a very, very quick way to bridge the gap between themselves and the realm of masculinity. But unfortunately, it's an illusion, because you can never take masculinity from somebody else through sexualizing them. You have to find it within yourself and claim it as your own through your own developmental needs being met, not through eroticizing other men.
And part of this we also see in poor chastity education for teenagers. You know, all these hormones are kicking in. Suddenly the sexual awareness, sexual self-expression is coming up, and parents go, okay, just don't have sex. There's no explanation. It's that exotic thing that's off limits that makes it more interesting when it becomes so off limits and there's no acknowledgement of sexual attraction, sexual struggle, the appropriateness of what we indulge in our minds. This can be contributed to by how parents approach sex at home.
And I think too often people focus just on the teachings of the church as being restrictive and not on the larger systemic issue of what conversations are parents having with their children, and what is their relationship like with their child, and are they modeling patience with the child trying to over time integrate their sexuality into their faith, or are they just disengaging and ignoring the issue altogether and encouraging their child just to repress their sexual urges and not think about them?
We have just a few minutes. I want to talk about two things. That is the importance of friendships with people of the same sex, but also really go a little deeper into how important it is that boys separate somewhat from the mother and spend more time in the male realm with the father as a mentor.
Absolutely. I think what is important to acknowledge here is no one is saying that a son can't be close with his mother. What we're talking about is enmeshment. And that's a psychological term for almost like what we say is codependence in pop psychology. Mm-hmm. So if a young boy is codependent in some ways with mom, and dad is mysterious and other and different and distinct, then eroticism is certainly not going to be directed towards the female realm, which is all too familiar and often overwhelming to the young boy.
So are you saying he's identifying more as a woman because that's all he knows?
Well, we would distinguish, yes, but we would call it a gender identity deficit, not a gender identity confusion, because they might know that they're a man, but part of them doesn't think they truly are man enough. Mm-hmm. And so that gender identity deficit is sort of a symptom that leads to the seeking of the illusion of the homosexual fantasy that makes up what is lacking, they perceive as lacking in themselves. Mm-hmm. Really, they're not necessarily lacking as a man, they're just lacking in their understanding of what manhood and masculinity is to them.
Now speak to friendships as well.
Sure, friendships are an important part of the healing journey for many of the guys that deal with same-sex attraction that I know personally, that are clients of mine, or even in my own journey. Friendship is so important because it models acceptance, love, and masculine connection. Iron sharpens iron. We hear this both in the Bible as well as, you know, popular culture. So if we can have males who are modeling safety and attachment in a way that can bind or heal, be a balm to the wounds of our youth, whatever those wounds were, this can be a part, an aspect of the pathway out of homosexuality, even if it's just towards celibacy or towards exploring heterosexual potential in the long run.
Absolutely. So where can people find more if they want to dive a little deeper into the topic? Because we're scratching the surface. We are scratching the surface, but for a lot of people, this is going to be really deep.
Okay,
and
so we're going
for them. So if you haven't caught the episode, Michael has been with us two episodes this week. You can find his other episodes at radiotrending.com. Just look underneath the host's page and he'll be right there starting this week on Wednesday.
Sure. They can go to our website, reintegrativetherapy.com. Or they can check out on YouTube our documentary called Free to Love, which is absolutely free to watch on YouTube. I'm in that documentary. Mm-hmm. That's specifically addressing the behavioral sciences aspect of sexual orientation development and therapy to address these issues in accordance with people's values. But of course, the church also has fantastic ministries available to people. You have had people on here from the Courage Apostolate, which is an official apostolate of the church that helps men and women with same-sex attraction live according to their faith and try to strive to be chaste.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing these resources. It is so helpful for people who are struggling to handle this issue that, you guys, it's like a flood and we're hearing it more and more. We have to be really careful because this overexposure really is influencing the way we think and the way young minds are being formed as well.
And there is hope, there is healing, and there's freedom in Christ. And I want to leave you guys to know that you're not alone if you deal with this. And if you love someone who deals with this, remember, God is love and love is patient.
So you can find Michael at reintegrativetherapy.com as well as the Breakthrough Clinic. Links are at the website. God bless you all.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To book her to speak or learn more about her guest, visit radiotrending.com. That's radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.